From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to an episode of the Wildcast podcast. I am Justin Spears, joined here with Michael Lev and Ryan Finley. And for all of you amazing people here sitting at Frog and Firkin, we are hosting a live podcast every Thursday before Arizona home football games. And we are a part of the Arizona Daily Star. We have a new outlet, I should say, or branch, a part of our brand that is called the Wildcaster. And along with that, we have the Wildcast podcast. And from all angles, whether it's football, basketball, baseball, softball, we have all of the angles. Don't forget to download the free Wildcaster app that's available on the App Store and Google Play. And if you want to subscribe to this podcast, well, subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts. There's right. multiple ways that you could listen to this podcast. So with that, here with Michael Lev, Arizona football beat writer and sports editor, Ryan Finley. Mm-hmm. Fellas, how's it going?
It's going fine. How come you guys aren't wearing your Arizona Daily Star shirts? I thought that was, like, mandatory or part of this whole deal.
Such a corporate suck-up.
Yeah.
I actually wore mine yesterday, believe it or not. And so,
I thought it's just for branding purposes.
I think we should.
Is that the idea?
Yeah. Well, we're working on Wildcaster polos.
Tank tops and, like, you know, trucker hats, I think, for all of us.
Muscle shirt.
Trucker hats.
Muscle. Guess what, Michael Lev, by the way? I just realized this driving over today. There's football on tonight. And not bad football either.
Not just any football, but Northwestern Wildcat football against Purdue.
Yes.
How about that?
Conference football.
Yeah, big announcement, Justin. We're shifting
August.
All the attention of the Wildcaster to the Northwestern Wildcats.
To talk about Big
everybody,
Ten football.
Everybody into that?
I think the only person into Northwestern football is you, Michael Lowe.
Oh, come on. P.J. Brown's over here. She's from the Midwest.
Bruce Pascoe, Northwestern guy.
Wisconsin fan, right? One of my picks for the college football playoff.
You should never bring up Wisconsin around these parts, especially
why
on University
that?
Boulevard.
Why is that?
Oh, two straight. But before your time, Wisconsin eliminated Arizona from two consecutive NCAA tournaments. Frank Kaminsky went
off. Because of basketball.
Yeah, basketball.
Oh, I'm well aware of that, but I don't really think about basketball.
Right.
You know, ever.
And
so,
and right out here after those loss, or the first loss, was, well,
rioting.
A little rioting. Just right outside here
really?
Of this fine establishment.
Right.
Really?
Yes.
No kidding.
And who would have thought all those years ago, Justin Spears, that we would be paid then down the road to do a podcast live from Frog and Firkin here on University Avenue? It's fantastic, by the way. We're looking out, and then we can get into U of A football here in a minute. This place is jammed. I haven't been down here in a while. It is incredible how much cooler this place is now.
Yeah.
TVs everywhere, U.S. Open, all sorts of baseball. I'm sure on Saturday, tons of football. Very cool place here at Frog and Firkin.
Mm-hmm. And they renovated the back, so there's a little additional piece to the this fine establishment. And like you said, usually whenever we're here, we have a pitcher in front of us. But
yes, there's no pizza, there's no beer, but maybe we can solve at least the pizza part of it. Maybe.
Okay,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
With that, fellas, I think we should talk about Arizona Wildcats football. I think that's the reason why a lot of people tune in to this podcast, because we are officially here at the start of the Kevin Sumlin era. The Wildcats will take on BYU this Saturday at 7 p.m. at Arizona Stadium. And Michael, 8 months, roughly, 8.5 months since Kevin Sumlin was hired up until this point, and now that we're here, what have you taken away from the offseason of the start of the Kevin Sumlin era?
Well, it's been a little different in terms of the way that Kevin Sumlin handles things. He's obviously the man in charge of the program, but he doesn't feel the need to talk every single day to the media, which... Some coaches do. Some of us in the media appreciate that. Some of us, maybe we're a little bit indifferent about it. But he seems like the kind of guy who sort of like, let's let our actions speak. You know,
sure.
He hasn't like propped up Khalil Tate as this Heisman candidate that everyone else seems to think he is. He's sort of like, he's still young. He still has a lot to prove. You know, he's barely played. I think he hasn't stated it this way, but I get the sense that it's like, we still have a lot to prove. You know, so let's let our play speak for us. That's to me kind of the overall tone of this regime so far.
Right, and here's the thing too. And even if he was talking every day, and if he was kind of out in the world like certain coaches in the past had been, we'd still be at the same spot right now. Right, we're what 48 hours away from kickoff, a little bit more than that, 58 hours away from kickoff. It's time to play football. I mean, sort of all the talking, all the depth chart talk. The speculation about sort of who will do what, how they will look, all of that goes away when you get here. I mean, now it's like, well, are they better than BYU? I'll be honest with you. The more I think about this game and the more I look at this game, the more worried I am. I think BYU is a tough challenge in week one.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Ryan. It was the point where it was like, okay, we're sitting here in week one right before the game. And I was like, you know what? BYU might actually, I'm not saying they're going to upset Arizona, but I would not be surprised if it comes down to Khalil Tate having the ball in his hands in the last drive of the game.
Sure. Well, how many games last year came down to that? I mean, the bowl game did, for sure.
Yeah.
The Colorado game did. When people forget about the Colorado game, it wasn't one of his touchdown runs, but he made this incredible tackle-breaking run to run out the clock,
right?
Basically, yeah. At the end. Mm-hmm. That was a game where, gosh, I don't know if there were any punts, but it didn't seem like there were any punts. I don't think this game is going to be like that. I think it's going to be much more defense and field position oriented. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, I feel a lot better about Arizona in those two aspects. We know the defense has got a lot more experience. I detailed that in a story today about how many more games they have under Marcel Yates, how many more career starts the defense has this year compared to last year or the year before. And also they have Dylan Klump now punting the football, and punting was a huge problem for them last year. I mean, you could argue that the way the previous staff handled the end of the first half cost them the ASU game, but they were still in it.
Mm-hmm.
Punting in that game, that was one of the two games where there was a dropped punt that was basically blocked. Same thing happened against USC. I mean, it was just a major problem all year where that whole operation was off. They didn't have their long snapper, which they do now. So if this ends up being that kind of game, I feel a lot better about how the Wildcats can handle it.
But would you feel better about Khalil Tate? I mean, to me, that's the question. If this turns into kind of a field goal at the end to beat BYU kind of game, does that tell you maybe that Khalil Tate is not quite who we think he is at this point?
No, I don't think so. Okay. I think it might be more of a referendum on the offensive line, which is something that we've talked about a lot on this podcast and in this whole preseason buildup. Mm-hmm. I mean, who knows what you're going to get from that unit? I mean, it's basically all new except for one guy, Cody Creason, who's been a part-time starter the last 2 years. To me, with Khalil, it's more about patience, right? Like, I looked at all of his interceptions from last year, and I think the common theme was he'd try to make something out of nothing. You know, he'd force the ball downfield. Is he going to be patient this year? Yeah. Is he going to just throw the ball away or chuck it out of bounds or check down to a running back or whatever instead of trying to force it downfield? And when you're playing a team like BYU, they had this great stat in their game notes about they gave up the fewest plays of 20-plus yards of any team in the country last year. Arizona obviously thrived on that once Khalil Tate became the quarterback. So that's the game to me between Khalil and that defense is how patient is he going to be.
And it all starts with the big boys up front and the offensive line. Because Leith Frick,
former offensive lineman Justin Spears.
I'm always going to ride for my
boys
up front.
It all starts with the offensive line. Go ahead.
It all starts with the big boys up front. Leith Frick, who was awarded another year of eligibility because his freshman year only appeared in one game. Mm-hmm. He's gone because he's going to miss the first two games of the season. Depth chart is Michael Lev's favorite part about this week because we get to have a better idea of what the product will be like for Arizona
eventually,
on the field.
Yeah.
And, well, we'll see what that depth chart looks like. But whoever plays left tackle, I mean, they're going to have their work cut out for them because, like you said, BYU's defensive lineman. Ryan, when you were on my radio show the other day, you were talking about BYU's big boys up front.
Yes.
They have a defensive end
that
is 6'9".
Right.
And his brother, 6'7".
Yes.
An interior defensive tackle that's 6'4", 330 pounds.
And the average age of those four guys is something like 23 and a half.
Yeah.
Stephen Cafusi?
Corbin Cafusi.
Thank you. Corbin Cafusi is 6'9", something like 265 pounds.
Yeah.
He is 25 years old. And he's going to line up against a U of A guy who isn't old enough to buy, say, one of the many beers that they have on tap here at Frog and Firkin. I think that's a problem.
Yeah.
And I think going, well, you know, Khalil Tate can just run away from those guys.
No.
I mean, the big challenge here is this is going to be a game about maturity versus inexperience.
Yeah.
Can Arizona overcome its inexperience and beat BYU's maturity? I don't know.
And when you said this is all about Khalil Tate being patient, you can't be patient if your offensive line isn't getting you protection. Mm-hmm. So I expect Khalil Tate, like you said, check down to the running backs. This is where, like I said, we're going to see the college football world say hello to Gary Brightwell, who was slotted in as the starting running back, but last year he was a slot receiver, and then now is coming back as a running back. This is where you could see J.J. Taylor and Gary Brightwell catch out of the backfield.
I don't know. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me of how many receptions the running backs had last year, but it wouldn't surprise me if they eclipse that total within two or three games this year.
Yeah.
I just think that's going to be a major part of the offense. Mm-hmm. There's going to be just a much bigger emphasis on let's get the ball out of Khalil's hands, you know, quickly. I mean, even Sean Poindexter referenced it when we talked to him on Tuesday. It's like, I got to get open quick because I know that BYU's got a big, strong veteran defensive line, and everyone knows that, you know, this offensive line of Arizona's is going to take a while for them to come together.
Mm-hmm.
Let's switch over to the defensive side of the ball because, again, that's another important topic for Arizona football heading into this season. As we all know, they return freshman All-American linebackers that are now sophomores in Colin Schooler and Tony Fields. And, Michael, I was talking to you last week. It seems like those two do everything together. They walk out of the football facility together. They're always in the weight room together. Anytime I see like football players walking, it's always Colin Schooler and Tony Fields. From you watching them last season and now another year experienced, Michael, I'm curious, what are you expecting out of Tony Fields and Colin Schooler for this season?
Yeah, I'm expecting them to take their games to the next level. You know, they were both really good last year. But I think they both feel like they can do better. Tony Fields, fearless player. He's just one of those guys who'll fly around, throw his body into guys who are bigger than he is. Maybe a little bit reckless at times. I think he can play with a little bit more discipline, be a little smarter. He's obviously going to be stronger than he was last year, and I think he's capable of making more impact plays. When you look at his profile, you don't see a ton of the forced fumbles, interceptions, those type of things. So I'm looking for that from him. Colin Schooler, I mean, to me, he's got the potential to be an All-American this year.
Wow.
I mean, why not? We saw, I hate to bring up this name, but we saw Scooby Wright make that jump from his freshman year to his sophomore year, right? I mean, he went from being a good, promising player to a superstar. I'm not saying that Colin Schooler is going to do the same thing, but I think he's capable of being a star.
You know why I think he can be better this year? It's because the guys who play in front of him are going to be better this year.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at Arizona's kind of returning defensive line, Derek Bowles, a big, strong kid. You bring in P.J. Johnson, who weighs what, Michael Love?
335 pounds is what he's listed
as. That's a big boy.
Yeah, that's a big boy.
And we've heard he's one of those guys, too. Like, there's certain guys, I always ask the players, like, what young guys have impressed you? What new guys have impressed you? You hear a lot of Gary Brightwell. You hear a lot of Stanley Berryhill. Right. But from, like, offensive linemen, it's always P.J. Johnson.
Right. It, to me, I mean, that's the thing that, especially in this defense, the linebackers thrive when the guys in front of them create holes. And I think that Arizona's improved defensive line is really the big storyline with this group. I think that it could really help the playmakers make plays, as kind of cliche as that sounds. You know, we're worried, obviously, about the defensive backfield and the depth at cornerback. I think that the sort of renewed talent level on the defensive line is really going to be a difference maker this season.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. P.J. Johnson is a big boy, and he's going to fill some gaps this year, and he's going to help out the rushing defense. But I think you hit it right on the head, Brian. With him being able to make plays and get to the quarterback and being able to create a stalemate on the line.
Right.
It allows Colin Schooler, Tony Fields, Kylan Wilborn to make plays for Arizona and get to the quarterback. And
yep.
I didn't really see a lot of pass rush last year. Kylan Wilborn was the bright spot for them in 2017. I think another freshman, another year older with experience and bigger defensive line up front, I think he's going to be another bright spot for Arizona this year.
Yeah, I know for a fact that Marcel Yates, the defensive coordinator, would like to blitz less than he's had to over the last couple of years to generate a pass rush, right? Like, think back to the New York Giants against the New England Patriots, right? What was the formula for them on defense? Rush 4, drop 7. If you can get a consistent pass rush with only 4 guys and drop 7 into coverage, that's kind of the hardest defense to beat. Can Arizona do that? I mean, I'm not sure. We've only seen them for a very brief time against their offensive line.
Right.
So to me, that was kind of a mismatch, and it maybe made the pass rush look a little better than it was. But I do like Kylan Wilborn a lot, and he's talked about the game slowing down for him. He looks bigger and thicker and stronger than he was before. What I want to know, though, is who's going to be that guy on the other side? You know, is Justin Belknap ready now to be a playmaker? You know, I mean, he's been a solid player for them, but another one where you look at his stats and you don't see a lot of tackles for losses or forced fumbles. We've heard good things about Jalen Cochran, who's totally flown under the radar, but a guy who's kind of fought through some injuries, fought through some personal stuff. Maybe he's ready to be one of those guys on the other side who can be that complement to Kyler.
Was Jalen Cochran the guy who left and came back?
Yeah, that's correct.
Where did he go? Like Central Michigan or
he's
something?
He's from Michigan. He was at one point, and I don't know if he was committed to Michigan State or they had expressed a lot of interest in him. Mm-hmm. People thought he was going to go there. That would be a really interesting one if he made an impact. But they need someone on the opposite side of Kylan Wilborn. It can't just be him.
Speaking of obscure guys, not obscure, but under the radar guys and new guys, I'm curious with both of you, Justin and Michael, of the new players, who are you the most excited to see?
Ooh, that is very interesting.
That is a good question.
Specifically on defense or
in general? Speaking general.
He's flown under the radar because he was a walk-on, but he was awarded a scholarship a couple weeks ago, and that is wide receiver Stanley Berryhill. I don't know how much he's going to be a part of the offense just because, you know, they have Sean Brown, Cedric Peterson, Sean Poindexter, and then plus the tight end. So how many snaps will he get? That's the biggest question for him. But, you know, I talked to his dad, and his dad said something very interesting that I'll always remember. And, of course, you know, typical dad hyping up his kid. But he said, looking at Arizona's roster right now, Stanley Berryhill is the closest thing to Christian Kirk out of anybody that's on the roster.
Whoa.
And I think that's a bold statement because Christian Kirk is
Christian Kirk looked good
player.
In a uniform. Yeah.
But he thrives under Kevin Sumlin and Noel Mazzone. So with Stanley Berryhill, again, he's not a big wide receiver, but he's fast, he's quick in space, he can make plays. I actually look for him to be a key member of the special teams unit, and if he can make plays on kickoff returns or even punt returns, he could probably wiggle his way into the offense and get more plays.
Yeah, I think it's going to be kind of like 2 to 3 plays a game where he's going to pop out in some form or fashion. You know, he's going to catch a bubble screen and turn it into a 20-yard gain, or maybe it's going to be on kickoff return or something. But can I cite a punter for this? Can I go with Dylan Klump?
Dylan Klump.
The nutty professor, Dylan Klump?
Yeah.
can that be his nickname? Can we make that his nickname?
Done.
Okay.
I mentioned before how punting was a problem for them last year, and in a game like this where maybe there's going to be more punts than we think, I mean, if you can flip field position in a legitimate way, I mean, that makes a huge difference in a game. And you look at what their net punting average was last year, was I think it was around 29 yards a game and something like 7 or 8 yards difference between them and their opponents.
Right.
That adds up over the course of a game. Those yards make a big difference. So that's the newcomer that I've got my eye on.
You know what Rick Neuheisel used to say, obviously, about punting? punting is winning. He's the best. I'll tell you who I'm looking forward
game.
To. The kicking game. That's how you can tell old school football from new school football. If a guy refers to all special teams as the kicking game, he's 60 years old or older. Fair? Michael Love?
I love the kicking game. I also love when people from the South say program.
Program's good. Program's good.
The president, Bobby Robbins, says program.
He says program.
I love it. I can just hear listen to him say program all day long.
One of the guys who I'm excited to see, and I'm going to butcher the name, obviously, but Theo Lacusa from Michigan
Perfect.
State. Thank you. Well, because Theo's short for something longer.
Shiambu.
There we go. Yeah. Theo Lacusa from Michigan State is a guy who I'm really excited to see. I'm really curious, too, to see kind of where he is, right? Physically, mentally, the whole nine yards. The way he left Michigan State was kind of unique. He basically said, I'm done with football, I'm tired of football, I'm walking away from football. Walked away from football, and then a few months later, found himself at Arizona on Rich Rod's team last year. Had to sit out because he was a four-year school transfer. But my goodness, Michael, he looks the part. You want to talk about guys who you want leading you off the bus. He's one of them. He has big school pedigree. There was a time when he was a very highly rated recruit. Somebody who I think can really slot in and be a stabilizing force on what's going to be a very thin, very young offensive line, at least early in the year.
He played 8 games as a true freshman at Michigan State.
Right.
So that should tell you something about the talent level. He's a guy who lost a lot of weight. A lot of guys have gained weight. It seemed like the offensive linemen, for the most part, they wanted them to be a little smaller and quicker. Couple things about Theo. Rich Rod, you know, he would say last year that, like, this is the test for him and to test whether he truly loves football. Having to sit out a year and play on the scout team.
You have to practice and no games and
right.
no fun.
I mean, that's exactly. That's not fun. And he made it through that. And he's come out on the other side. And he has put himself in a position where he's going to start, in all likelihood, for the Wildcats on Saturday night. There's two guys who I feel like have been kind of the constants on the offensive line. Cody Creason on the right tackle and Theo Lacusa on the other side. What's interesting, though, is that toward the end of camp, they put him at guard. Not wow. tackle. I think everyone thought he would be, you know, maybe
he'd
start at left tackle.
Isn't he?
Yeah, he'd start at left tackle while Freck was out.
Right.
And then maybe he'd move to right tackle. But I think the thinking is, if we put him in this one spot, the fewer changes need to be made when Lathe comes back.
Right.
So they have the makings of a really good left side of the line when Lathe comes back in week 3. Unfortunately, you know, he's not going to be back until week 3. Mm. And BYU poses a difficult test in Houston. The following week poses an even more difficult test.
Yeah.
Like you said, with the offensive line, the left side has a chance to be really great for them. But I'm curious about the center, Michael Lev. Right there in the middle.
Former center Justin Spears thinks that the... Go ahead, sorry.
Nathan Eldridge has been practicing with the Wildcats all fall camp.
Nope.
And Robert Congel, who is a Texas A&M transfer...
likely not eligible.
Likely not eligible because we asked Kevin Sumlin in his Monday press conference, and he said, no, they're not eligible. So that leaves a gap right there at center. And, Michael, you're thinking it's going to be, one, Josh McCauley.
Yeah, Josh McCauley, who he and John Jacobs are these two walk-ons who just sort of seem like from the day they arrived, the former coaching staff heaped a lot of praise on them. The current coaching staff heaped a lot of praise on them. And they both kind of, I don't know if it's just kind of because of attrition or because of their own merits, have put themselves in a position where they're needed. And it looks like Josh McCauley's probably going to be the starting center for Arizona, which maybe that's a little scary, but maybe Josh is better than we think. Just because a guy has been labeled a walk-on doesn't mean that he can't play. Stanley Berryhill, who you mentioned earlier in the podcast, he was a walk-on. There's been a lot of cases... specifically here at Arizona, where guys have risen from that walk-on status to become regulars. Each of the last two head coaches, Ryan Finley.
Former walk-ons.
Rich Rodriguez and Kevin Sumlin, former walk-ons who turned themselves into scholarship players.
Well, and Rich Rod really prided himself on having what he called the best walk-on program in the country, right? Is he wanted to bring in guys who could work their way up. And he rewarded a handful of guys every year with scholarships, just like Kevin Sumlin did with Stanley Berryhill. I gotta feel bad, and I feel terrible for somebody like a Nathan Eldridge, He's a guy who's really stuck it out. Somebody who probably wasn't a future pro NFL type guy. Somebody who I think really liked playing football, sacrificed his body like you wouldn't believe. I mean, this guy was limping in and out of practice last spring and has really been limited this spring, hasn't he?
Right, yeah. I mean, I think he's practiced some. We don't get to see all of the practices. From what I did see, I tried to sort of monitor it and chart it as much as I could. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how often he did, but it wasn't often enough. And we haven't gotten this depth chart yet. Mm-hmm. We're still waiting. But from what I've been told, he's not going to be in the mix. Right. And
it's a leg or knee?
Knee, something in the, we'll say lower body. Okay. But coming into the season, right, it was like they have two returning starters on the offensive line. Well, in week one, in week two, at least, there are going to be none returning starters on the offensive line. So.
All right, guys. Well, depth chart, we could talk about it all day long. But as but as we all know, the Arizona Wildcats will open up their 2018 season at home this Saturday against BYU. Real quick, before I let you guys go. It's a first for everything. First for Kevin Sumlin as the head coach at Arizona. Mm-hmm. And it's the first time Arizona Stadium will sell beer and wine at mm-hmm. games.
Yes.
And EG's is coming back to
correct
Arizona Stadium. So it should be a fun time. How are you guys predicting this game will shape up? I'm going to access the mind of Michael Levin, Ryan Finley. How do you think the game will shape up and who will win and why?
Yeah, I think lower scoring game than maybe people think. I'm not going to go to the extreme of the 2016 game, which okay. the final score was really weird.
It was 18-16.
Oh, 18-16.
Okay.
That's right.
Which
Jeez.
Is, no one could have possibly foreseen how that would go. And I might at some point here detail for our readers how many changes have happened since that game, which was only 2 years ago for Arizona specifically. But I don't see a shootout because BYU's defense is good and because Arizona's offensive line is, as we've mentioned ad nauseum, still figuring things out. So, I think it might come down to Khalil Tate having to make a couple plays, but if we know anything about Khalil Tate, he is a playmaker and he is capable of rising to the occasion. And I do think that the new coaching staff is going to get the best out of him. I don't know if we're going to see the best of Khalil in week one. I think he's going to improve gradually over the course of the season. But the score I'm going with for now is Arizona 30, BYU 20.
Michael Lev is so nuanced. This is why I love having you here. I think it's more simple than that. I think it's 17-14 Arizona. I think it's a late field goal. I think that week one is always
yes.
A dress rehearsal, and nobody comes out humming in week one against a real opponent, at least. I mean, you'll watch football games today. They're all either going to be low-scoring tight games or somebody's playing the Little Sisters of the Poor, and it's going to be 70-3. I think this is a slugfest between two teams, an experienced BYU club on one side and an inexperienced Arizona team on the other. I think it's going to be sloppy. I do. It might be a wet evening, which again would compound matters. I think it's late field goal, 17-14 Arizona. Arizona escapes, and the Khalil Tate Heisman hype dies down just a little bit because they only put up two touchdowns in their season opener.
You took the words right out of my mouth, Ryan. It is going
great
to be
minds, Justin. Great minds.
A late field goal because I'm going back to 10 years ago when Arizona hosted BYU, and what happened? Nick Folk. Not Nick Foles, not the quarterback, the kicker, Nick Folk, hit a late game-winning field goal to win the game.
That was my first ever game on the Arizona beat. Headline was, in the nick of time. Anyway, go ahead.
So, it's going to be sloppy.
Right.
Arizona, BYU, they'll be in a back-and-forth battle. I think BYU's defensive line in the front seven, they'll get to Arizona, which will force Khalil Tate to check down to guys like Gary Brightwell, J.J. Taylor. Who knows? We might even see a couple tight end passes.
I was just thinking about Bryce Woolman.
Yeah.
So
just thinking about that.
I think it's going to come down to a late game-winning field goal. Lucas Haversick, who is the new kicker, or he joined the team a couple years ago.
He might be the new kicker. Again,
he is the new kicker.
Waiting on the depth chart.
So San Clemente's own Lucas Habersack, yes? San Clemente? Right?
Riverside.
Oh, Riverside. Anyway, go ahead.
They're not like near each other, Ryan.
Not
as you
all.
Should know, as a Southern Californian.
Not at all. Not at all.
You can't just lump those together.
But Habersack has a leg. Would he hit a 57-yard field goal against Washington State last season?
So are you implying that this last-second field goal is going to be like a 62-yarder or something of
from,
that nature?
From midfield.
In the rain? That would be kind of awesome.
With the
it?
Win in favor of the Wildcats going into the north end zone. I'm going to go ahead and predict. What's Lucas Habersack's number?
43.
It's going to be a 43-yard field goal. Arizona wins 24-21. Wildcats start off 1-0. And like you said, Ryan, Khalil Tate, Heisman talk dies down just a little bit.
Right.
Just a little bit. Maybe it will pick back up against Houston if he goes off, or maybe somewhere down the line in the Pac-12 season. So, anyways, I think that should be a good stopping point for us. Special thanks to Frog and Firkin for hosting our podcast. Again, we will be here every Thursday at noon to host the Wildcast podcast. Don't forget to download the free Wildcaster app, subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, and follow us on Twitter.
Before we go, by the way, you know it's our anniversary, not mine and yours, but it is the one year anniversary of the Wildcast, and this is very cool. I mean, we've done 120 some odd Wildcasts already here in the last year. Could think of no better way to celebrate. And you know what they got us? What the Daily Star got us for our anniversary is new microphones and headphones.
Yes.
So if we sound better, that is because we have all new audio equipment. And thanks to Jay Walsh for helping coordinate all of that, Rob Weisner, Becky Palick, and everybody at the Arizona Daily Star for making us sound a little bit more professional. I sound 20% less ridiculous today thanks to these microphones.
Well, you didn't have any hot takes either. So.
Not yet.
I wouldn't go that far, Ryan. I'd say like maybe 10%.
The season is young.
Well, again, don't forget to follow us on Twitter at the Wildcaster. Follow us on Facebook and give us a follow on Instagram. We are on Instagram, always providing pictures, videos, everything that you need. And as always, download that free Wildcaster app. It has podcasts, Michael Lev's stories, and photo galleries and video galleries from our amazing photographers and digital producers. Anyways, for Michael, for Ryan, I'm Justin. Thank you for listening.